Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to CPA Review, and more you are listening to CPA Review, and more you are listening to CPA Review, and more you are listening to CPA Review, and more.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you're joining from. And thank you for listening to this episode of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager. I'm your producer and director here at the Yeager Studios, Rob Medford, and together we are bringing you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you're new to the show, I'd like to be the first to thank you for checking us out. We're excited to have you as part of our listenership. If you're here because you've already heard our show and you're a continued listener, we thank you for the ongoing support. It's always greatly appreciated. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to know more about what Yeager CPA Review has to offer, check out our website at YeagerCPAReview.com or call our office and we'll answer any questions you might have. The link and telephone number will be in the description of this episode. Here at Team Yeager, we're excited to tell you about our new Yeager CPA Review subscription format. It's the same great Yeager CPA Review course that you know and love on an all-new, month-to-month, no long-term commitment subscription format. But without any further delay, I'm going to pass the microphone on over to your host, Phil Yeager.
Thank you very much, Mike, for being on. I appreciate it tremendously. And I've known you for probably about 5 years. I was trying to figure out how long I've known you, but it has to be at least 5 or 6 years. And probably before you were vice president of examinations, what was your position?
Yeah, so I've been, I think, VP about 4 to 5 years, and I've been with the AICPA 10 years. So yeah, you probably knew me as the director of operations and development working for Craig Mills, but I've been with AICPA 10 years. So you probably knew me throughout that whole duration.
Yes, I believe I did. It's been a while. Time goes
yep. by. Yes, it sure does.
And what, as a vice president of examinations, exactly what do you do at the AICPA examination division?
Well, the exams team is unique as a group within the AICPA. The AICPA owns and scores the uniform CPA exam. So this group is somewhat kept independent from the rest of the AICPA in keeping with the sort of the rules and regulations as part of the tri-party agreement with both NASBA, the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, and then with Prometric. So there's a team of about 62 staff here in Ewing, New Jersey. We're midway between, say, the Philadelphia Airport and the Newark Airport. We're just south of Princeton, New Jersey. And essentially, we do everything responsible for both development and scoring of the exam. We've got about 17 or 18 CPAs working on content. We've got about a dozen or so of operations and editorial and production staff, about 6 to 8 technology staff, and about 8 to 10 psychometricians, their PhD statistics and psychology responsible for scoring. And they do the scoring of the exam, and then we supported by compliance, communications, administration, facility, and finance, I guess. I think I said finance. So it's about 62 groups, and I try to stay out of the way and coordinate everybody to let them do you know, the very good job they were hired to do.
Are you at liberty to really discuss how the exam is graded? Can you tell candidates how the exam is graded?
I can, but there's actually a document on the website. It's called How the Exam is Scored, and it is on the AICPA website, so I'd encourage you to go visit that. And if you ever have questions about the exam, I'd encourage you to go to AICPA.org and CPA exam, and there's lots of information about how the exam is built, how it's scored. But yeah, I mean, essentially we follow the test blueprints that have been published, and we've got an item bank of, I guess it's approximately just under maybe 16,000 items sitting in our item bank, about 4,000 items per section. And each of those items, using item response theory, we know how difficult the item is. And we also know what area, group, and topic of the blueprint that item belongs to. And then before each quarter of the exam, we pull together, we have a systematic process called panel optimization. So it's think of it as a linear algebra kind of program that pulls together items based on area, group, topic, based on item difficulty, based on how long the item is, if it's a simulation. And then we build a panel. We build about 16 different versions of each of the four sections, and they're all statistically equivalent based on the statistics. And those panels are built for the exam. And then on the scoring side, on a multiple choice, you're either right or you're wrong. And on the simulation side, there are multiple what we call measurement opportunities, but there are multiple answers, if you will, for each simulation. And so we're looking at, you know, the number of correct measurement opportunities you've answered. And then it goes into more of a scoring module, because not all items have the same weight. So we're not just doing a percentage correct. And from that, we're able to score the exam.
Could we say the exam is machine graded overall?
Oh yeah, 100% machine graded. The only time we use humans is if a candidate is close to passing on BEC and we've already electronically graded the essay, we may send the essay out for manual grading to see if we missed something. But other than that, yeah, it's 100% computer graded and has been since 2004.
So the written communications in the BEC are machine graded also?
That's correct.
And what are you looking for when they write the written communications?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a misunderstanding on that. You know, when we designed this, we expected there to be better or more advanced research around a computer's ability to assess written communications for content accuracy. But I don't think the research has really, you know, come through on what we expected. So we are literally, you know, the engine is really looking for, do you have a strong introductory paragraph? Do you have sort of the meat of your argument? And then do you have a concluding paragraph? So we're looking for your ability to frame an argument. And then finish that argument. And then we're looking a little bit at grammar. We're not really looking at spelling, mostly grammar and your writing ability. Note that you don't have to be, your content doesn't have to be completely accurate, but you must remain on topic. So if we ask you an accounting question and you respond using Mickey Mouse and your knowledge of Disney characters, we know that you're not on topic and you probably won't pass that one.
How about sentence structure? Do you look at sentence structure?
I believe it does, yes. Yeah, sentence structure and paragraph structure.
So how does someone prepare for the business, you know, the BEC written communications? I mean, do you have samples of it on the SCPA website?
Is that yeah, I think that's one way to do it. Again, going back to the AICPA website, you can always go to our sample test, which has sample questions, both of multiple choice questions, simulations, and the essay. And there's a sample test. In fact, we just recently updated it. There's a sample test for each of the four sections of the exam. So I'd encourage all the candidates to go visit that as well.
So if they look at that written communication sample you're talking about just now, all right?
Yeah.
How do they know if they're writing it correctly? I mean, it doesn't grade them, does it?
No, but I think, you know, again, if they've completed college courses in writing and they've done okay, then I think they know how to write, so.
Well, a lot of the people taking the exam, English is the second language. So they do have sort of problems with the written communication. Now, what I recommend to them, and maybe I'm recommending the wrong thing, I tell them to go get the Grammarly program, which is basically, you know, it can look at, you know, sentence structure, grammar, to see if what they're writing makes sense. And for someone who has, even, you know, English is a first language, I would say that's a way of practicing. And I'm not pushing Grammarly. I don't get back any money from them. But have you heard anything about Grammarly as far as a practice product?
I have not, but I think based on what you've shared here, that sounds like a perfectly good prep tool. So yeah, I think that's a great idea.
And they're beginning, they have one that's free on their website, but it doesn't actually look at sentence structure. So for, I think it's $60, you know, a year, and hopefully you're not going to be taking the BC for a year, the written communication, I would say it's a good way of practicing. And I mentioned that on other podcasts. You talk about, and I looked at your, LinkedIn site, mm-hmm. and you stated that a candidate should review the blueprints. Okay.
Yes.
Now, first of all, you realize that about 50% of the people still don't know what the blueprints are. Are you aware of that?
I don't know if that, I don't know the actual numbers. We do, we have, since we launched the blueprints back in 2017, we have seen increased numbers of downloads. So, we promote it and announce it and communicate it at all of our presentations. So I don't know if the number is 50% or not. All I do know is that more and more people are becoming familiar with the blueprint. So I'm more worried in the trajectory there than in the final number.
Well, all right. Let's talk about what are these blueprints? So that, you know, for those who don't even know what they are,
right.
What are the blueprints? I mean, you originally were testing on the content specification, correct?
That's right.
I know. So, why did you go from the content specification to these blueprints?
Well, I mean, for two reasons. We wanted to provide greater clarity, not only to the candidates and the students, but we wanted to provide greater clarity to our own item writers as well. So the concept of the blueprints came out of that last practice analysis. And essentially what we're doing is for each of the four sections, we've got over 600 representative task statements that essentially outline, you know, what you need to know, on the exam. And then within that blueprint, we go through each of the four sections, area, group, and topic. So for each area, group, topic, we tell you, from an accounting perspective, what content areas are in each area, group, and topic. And then the other thing that we do is we tell you at what level we are assessing that content. So in most cases, the multiple choice questions are assessing your remember and understanding level of knowledge, which is really just perception and comprehension. The next level up is application. And then above application, where you start to get into more of the simulations assessment, is analysis and evaluation. So the blueprints tell you, if you think of it as sort of multidimensional, on what dimension, let's say there's four sections, like audit has four content areas. Of the four content areas, what percentage of the test is made up of those four content areas? So if you think about that, say, as the rows, and then as the columns, and then on the rows, we tell you what percent is at the remember and understand level, what percent is at the application level, what percent's at analysis, and at the top level, we only have evaluation level items in audit, but we, you know, that's 5 to 15%, but we share that with you as well. And then we tell you the number of multiple choice questions and the number of simulations. You know, but the key is to look at those representative task statements. And if you come across one that you don't understand or you struggle to understand you know, that content area, you know, that's what you take back to your professor or to your, you know, review provider, or they give you a call, Phil, and they say, hey, I don't understand this concept, and you can help them out. And at the same time, we're sharing this with the people that write questions. So we can say, in, say, assessing risk and developing a plan response area is an analysis level question. So we can really pinpoint to the item writers what exactly we need.
Is it fair for me to say that the exam only tests on what's in the blueprints? Is that a fair statement?
I think it's more than fair. It's absolutely positively correct. Yes.
So I tell people, study the blueprints.
That's right.
More, nothing less.
That's correct. 100%.
Now, let's talk about the task-based simulations and the multiple choice.
Okay.
You're probably aware, and by the way, I must state, of course, that I am involved in a CPA review course. Okay. I want you to know that. But I try to be an advocate for the student.
Now, okay.
There are statements made by course providers, not mentioning any specific ones, that they say, all you have to, what you should do is, you want to pass this exam, do thousands and thousands of multiple choice. All right. Can you give a position, your position on that?
Yeah. You know, what was interesting in some of the focus groups we did on candidates that did not make it through the pipeline, I would say the one concern that I have is, it may be okay to memorize multiple choice questions and answers, and that may help you. That may get you through. I'm not so sure. It's always better to understand the concepts and be able to apply them. So I don't know if memorizing MCQs is the best way, but I do know, you know, based on the research that we've done, what we heard from the candidates was they ended up taking so many practice questions and so many test prep questions that when they got to the exam and they saw different questions, they didn't know the answer. So the challenge was, I think they ended up memorizing questions and answers instead of truly understanding the content. And where, okay, maybe you memorize enough MCQs that you could probably cobble together what the right answer is. But with a task-based simulation, you really have to understand the concept. So the recommendation would be, don't memorize, you know, understand the concepts, be able to apply it. And then that way, if we throw you a different distractor or a different question or a different scenario in a simulation, if you know the concept, you'll do better than pure memorization. And just the way we've structured the blueprint, we're moving away from memorization because the belief is you can always Google something, you can always look something up, but do you understand what it means and do you understand how to apply it? So,
is that what you mean by critical thinking?
I think so. You know, I can regurgitate lots of stuff, but if I don't know how to analyze it or what it means or interpret it or recommend something from it, then yeah, I'm not. You know, they're all critical thinking skills that I think the profession is requiring and we're now demanding on the exam.
And actually, we pay a royalty to the ASCPA examination division to use their questions. And
yes,
most of those questions come from the old content specification days. So really, what I tell the people is, yes, do those multiple choice, doesn't hurt, but they are based on lower level skills. Right, you can memorize after a while, and the questions are really not necessarily representative of the type of questions you'll get on the exam today.
Well, I think the questions that we release every year, you know, to yourself and other review course providers, they're not old, dusty questions sitting on the shelf. They are questions that are involved in everyday administrations. The challenge is once we release them to you all, we have to retire them from the item bank. So they're not dusty ones in the back, you know, like, you know, that old jar of jelly or barbecue sauce that you forgot you had. It's not that, you know, they are part of the normal cooking routine. It's just, you know, we know we release so many questions every year. So we just grab them off the front of the shelf. So therefore we're no longer cooking with them and we give them to you all. So, you know, they are applicable and they are current and valid. We don't maintain them after we release them to you, but they're definitely valid, you know, for a number of months.
Would you call that lower levels, the
no.
low ones?
The questions we release to you all are really distributed across the blueprint. We don't just release sort of the lower level questions. So the other thing is you probably can't tell by looking at a question. Well, or maybe you could. There's analysis type words. There's evaluation type words. There's application type words. You know, compare, contrast. Remember to understand is really just, do you understand this? Do you know and do you understand this fact pattern?
The task-based simulations. Students want, they pick courses based on how many task-based simulations that course actually gives to them. Now, tell me if what I'm saying is incorrect, because I will change it. I tell them the AICPA does not release to us, the providers, a lot of task-based simulations. So I tell them that if they know the blueprint, all right, they can just go to your task-based simulations on the AICPA.org website, practice those, all right? And if you know the different types of task-based simulations, all that's happening is Prometrics is like a template, okay? And if you know the information and you understand it from the blueprints, you take that information and you put it into that template. So all of these task-based simulations that courses have are probably not released by the AICPA. They're probably author-constructed. What's your position on that?
Yes, and honestly, I don't know what the other review course providers do or how they present the simulations. At the end of the day, if you understand the concept, then the template or the scenario in which we're presenting it to you shouldn't matter, right? The fact patterns are there, the attachments are there, the different spreadsheets are there, the authoritative literature is there. If you understand the concept, you can present it to me in a whole different number of user interfaces and the content doesn't change. I would imagine that the other review course providers use those different user interface techniques to just keep it fresh and offer up the content in a different perspective. But no, I don't know that that's critical to passing, not if you know the concepts.
Now, the next thing, you said in your LinkedIn, you said you need to review the blueprints. What does that mean to review versus know the blueprints?
Well, I think, as part of your sort of college education, right, as part of your test prep, let's say you're studying for audit. So to me, I'm going to go look at the blueprints because that's my roadmap for understanding what content is being tested in audit. And I'm going to look at the distribution of the exam, right? It's sort of like in high school when the teacher said chapters 1 to 6 will be 20% of your test and chapters 7 to 9 will only be 5%. Well, you're going to study where the greatest, percentages of content. You're not going to ignore any one specific area, but you're clearly going to focus on probably the higher allocated areas. So I think it's the same approach with the blueprints. As you go through your audit course, as you go through the prep, what part of, say, forming conclusions and reportings do you not understand? I would continually, I don't want to say flip-flop, but switch between looking at the blueprint to understand the different concepts and then going back to the books and the chapters and the review to understand, am I getting, the breadth and depth that I need? Similar to studying in high school, you had, I think it was, sometimes it was at the front of the chapter, sometimes it was at the end of the chapter, sometimes it was in the syllabus. Here's the key concepts. So if you didn't understand a key concept, you had to go read the book or you had to go do a little research. So I think it's just similar to that. We're giving you those key concepts.
So to clarify, the blueprints tell you the tasks, but they don't give you the information dealing with that task. Is that correct?
Right. The blueprints are sharing with you the, whether it's the accounting standard or how we want you to apply the knowledge, but or what knowledge needs to be applied at what level. That's really what the blueprints are telling you, but it's not giving you the specific question and answer, correct?
Yeah. I mean, like, for example, it might say in inventory, know how to calculate FIFO, LIFO, average cost under perpetual and periodic and prepared journal entries.
Right.
Now, you don't show them that in the blueprints.
Correct.
All right.
Correct.
So they have to hope that the course they're taking can, they can go right to that and get that information.
Okay. Right, but if you go to the blueprints under inventory and you see LIFO and FIFO and you think it's a pet food, then you might want to go back to the blueprints. You might want to go back to your text and go, I don't understand these pet food inventory models. So you might want to research that.
I think LIFO was a cereal. Do you remember that commercial?
I do. I do.
It wasn't a dog food, Mike.
Well, it was Mikey eat. Likes It, right?
Mikey Likes It.
That was Life. That was Life, not LIFO. But yeah. Maybe he had a dog named LIFO. Who knows?
I don't think so, Mike. Anyway. Now, you published percentages of how many people pass a part in a testing window. And, all right, I don't know if you have a copy. I don't have a copy of that. But some of those parts are like 47, 48%. Are you saying that during a testing window, 47% of those people have passed, for example, financial accounting? Is that what it means?
Yeah, so we publish pass rates per quarter, per section. So yeah, on average, and it's, I think it's pretty close across all four sections, somewhere between, say, 46 to 47% on the low end to almost 50, high 50s, mid to high 50s on the high end. On average, that percentage of candidates pass. No, that's not candidates. That's for every section taken. That's the number of passing grades granted for each of those sections. Overall, the pass rate is about almost 60%. So that pass rate figure is for every candidate that sits for at least one section of the exam, about 60% ultimately pass all four and become CPAs. And the 40% is candidates that are either are still testing or have dropped out.
So if it says 47% on a part for the testing window, does that mean you have a 50-50 chance of passing that part when you're taking it?
No, I don't think it applies to each individual candidate, but what it says for all the sections delivered that quarter, 47% of them passed and about 53% failed. So it's almost 50-50. But it, again,
how many candidates, for example, if I take financial accounting, I took it last testing window, what percent, do you break it down between people? How many people passed like financial accounting during that testing window? I mean, what percentage of people taking it, not by part, but what percentage of people?
Well, I mean, the challenge is you cannot take a failed section within a window. So I guess sections are people, right? Although somebody can take multiple sections, right? Somebody can take multiple sections in a window. So like here, for example, in 2019, the quarter just finished, right? The second quarter of 2019, there were 14,000 audit candidates or audit sections delivered and a little over 7,700 passed. So the pass rate for audit in the second quarter was 55%.
Well, let's go back again. Did 55% of the people taking the auditing during that testing window pass?
Correct.
They did?
I mean, the interesting thing is the overall pass rate since computerization has remained, not the overall pass rate, the initial first time pass rate of all sections, you know, passing all four sections in your first instant has remained at about 27%, 28% mm-hmm. since 2004. So for every candidate that passed all four in their first instance, it hasn't gotten, if it was getting easier, that number would go up, and it hasn't. It stayed relatively.
I understand what you're saying. So in other words, if I take all four parts under the present system,
right, and pass
them during this year,
probably, or any year, it's just the first time in the 18 months, right, you pass all four, only 28% of the people do that.
Okay.
And that hasn't really changed. If the exam has been given that much easier, then that pass rate would have gone up, and it doesn't. It stays pretty flat.
Now, I want to talk about this diagnostic report, because I emphasize that when the people get this diagnostic report, call me up, and I'm going to try to figure out maybe what you're weaker on, maybe what you need to study. And if you get a 72, I know you're not taking the same exam again, all right? But you must have known something. So the question is, when they see weaker, comparable, all right, how accurate are those words? Are you weaker compared to the other candidates? can they basically say they were weaker compared to all those candidates? And how is that basically determined?
Yeah, we can say that they're weaker. It's not at the same reliability levels that the exam is. So, you know, I'd say take it with a grain of salt, but you're definitely weaker. And I would just make sure you focus on, you know, if I got that report and I saw that I was weaker in two areas and okay in the others, I would focus my review of the blueprints and review of the content to those two areas, you know, and especially on the simulation side, I'd make sure that I focused on.
It would have to say that you were weaker in simulations. Isn't that correct?
No. What I'm saying is, you know, I'd focus on simulations and on MCQs, but maybe focus on simulations more in those weaker areas, especially if it was a higher order area, because my bet is that maybe that's where you're losing more points. You know, make sure you understand the simulations. Okay. I mean, the other thing is go back to your testing experience. When you took the break, were you about halfway through the exam, right?
Okay.
From a time perspective, if you were more than halfway through the exam, did you go too fast or did you feel comfortable? If you weren't even at halfway when the break came in, well, then maybe you don't understand the MCQ areas as well as you should. You know, were you pressed for time? You should not be pressed for time when sitting for the CPA exam. If you're pressed for time, then, you know, you got to get a little faster. You know, you probably don't know as much as you should, or you're not as comfortable with the content as you should.
Do you take into account time management in grading the exam if the student is good at time management?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's not when you think about it, you don't want the CPA exam to be a time test, right? Now, you know, fifth grade arithmetic, yeah, that's a time test. I want to know how good you are at your multiplication and division, right? But in a CPA, do I want to know how fast you can do accounting? No. I want to know that you've got the right breadth and depth of experience and knowledge. So it's not, there's something in psychometrics called speededness, and we do not want the CPA exam to be speeded. So we look at time it takes for most candidates to finish, you know, the time it takes for passing candidates to finish, and we make sure candidates have plenty of time.
Mike, the students get the diagnostic report when they fail, and it says on there whether they're weaker, comparable, or stronger. Now, if they are weaker, say, in one part, all right, it's fairly simple to understand, hey, this is the area you should emphasize. Not that you shouldn't go back and look at the other areas. But sometimes they're weaker in two, three areas, and they get like a 70. And they now come to me and they say, well, what should I do? I don't know which one I was weaker in. And this is one other thing they ask me. It says they're weaker in simulations, all right? And I tell them, they're not weaker in doing a simulation. They're weaker in the subject matter that simulation covered. I don't think a lot of them understand that.
Right, exactly. So when they get that weaker, they should look at the area that content, you know, identifies with, right? So weaker in area three. So go to the blueprint, what's area three? And then the blueprint will tell you at what level that content's being assessed. So if it's at the remember and understand or application level, we're telling you it's in the MCQs. If it's at the higher order skills of analysis, then it's the simulation. So yes. And, you know, to your sort of mantra, go look at the area group topic, go back to the blueprints, figure out where that area is being assessed, and then you'll know whether it's MCQs or simulations. But the blueprints will help you figure out those, and then look at the task statements. So which of those task statements do you not understand? Which of those concepts are you not very comfortable with? And that's where they should come back to you and sort of get a better understanding.
Now, when they do the task-based simulations, let's assume there's seven responses, all right? If they do four responses or five responses, does that mean they'll only get credit for four out of, say, seven? Or is a possibility of doing a certain number, like a sample of all of them, will give you possibly a higher grade? Is it still possible?
Well, right. So in a simulation, again, we call them measurement opportunities. If, let's say, a simulation typically has between say, two or three measurement opportunities to maybe eight or nine. I don't think they have many more than nine. So essentially that's, you know, nine answers. So yes, you'd rather have nine out of nine correct than two out of nine. So, you know, depending on the size of the simulation, your goal should be to get every answer within that simulation correct. A multiple choice question only gives you one answer, one question, one answer, right? A simulation can give you anywhere from 3 to 8 or 9 in 20 minutes. So, you know,
you're talking about 20 minutes, and that's to read the requirements of the question, read the facts, and then start working on that.
Right.
That's not a lot of time. And, you know, what happens, I mean, would you say to someone, well, how many responses do you think you got right? And they say, maybe 6 out of the 9. All right. Do you think they should feel like they're walking away and they have no chance of passing that part?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I do think, what I do know is that we send these simulations into testing. So we know that you know, average candidates can get them right with, you know, in the 20 minutes or so. So if you're taking 30 minutes, you're struggling as a candidate. You don't know the concept as well as you should. So if you're guessing at questions within a simulation, you know, make a mental note of that. And when you leave the exam, you know, make sure you go back and study those areas because you're clearly not, you know, proficient.
Who did you use as like a focus group on that?
Yeah, we use newly licensed CPAs and we use students for that.
Do they have a clock in front of them that's ticking off?
Yeah, we time them. We time them on how well they do, how well they perform.
They're under similar exam conditions.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, but I guess you could argue and say, well, they're not taking the exam to pass the CPA exam, where a candidate coming in there is under the pressure of they want to pass the exam. It's a little different.
Yeah, but we also have the timing data for all the live candidates that sit for the exam. So we know, we know that actually audit candidates finish the exam in 3.5 hours, whereas FAR, it's closer to 3:45, I think. I forget the exact figures, but in BEC, they have plenty of time left. So we know you got time to finish the exam. So you really should focus on making sure you answer all the questions completely.
Let's talk about the CPA itself. All right. The CPA is a license. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And it's a license to practice public accounting. Is that correct? Basically, to give an opinion. All right. The attest function.
You're so far so good.
Good. Thank you. And now it is my understanding, unless I've read these facts wrong, that the Big Four, most of the revenue is now coming from consulting, not audits anymore. All right. Have you heard anything like that?
Yeah, I think they've grown their consulting businesses, and that seems to be where their growth is. And audit and tax are growing, but just not at the rate that their consulting businesses are growing.
Okay. So the consulting is a greater part of their revenue now.
Yeah, I believe that to be the case. Yes.
Okay. So isn't it time to reevaluate the CPA as a license for public accounting? Because we know, all right, that the number of people taking the exam has decreased over the past 10 years, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. So now we have to basically, I know we discussed this a lot in our meetings, but we have to decide, what are we going to do here? Number of people taking the exam has decreased, and yet the CPA is still licensed to be in public accounting. Now, what I thought of an idea, which I didn't get to express, but this is just something I'm throwing out. Why can't we have the CPA like the bar exam? The bar exam is you go to law school, all right, and then you take the bar exam. And then after you get your license, you know, the bar exam, you pass it, you can practice in Maryland, whatever, all right. Then they decide whether they're going to specialize in patent law or criminal law, that type of thing. So if we went back, at one time the CPA was a certificate, is that correct?
It wasn't just a certificate, but I do know that at some point there was a two-tier model where some held their certificate and others held the license.
Correct. That's what I had. It was Maryland was, if I passed the exam, I got a certificate. If I wanted to practice in public accounting, I would have to get the years of experience. All right. Okay. So it was two-tier. All right. But now, all right, the exam is a little different because back then, public accounting was the big thing, you know, audits. That's what we mainly did, because that's what I did when I went to work for Seidman & Seidman. All right. All of the people coming in, basically, we did audits. All right. We couldn't work in the tax department because they said it had to be tax attorneys who were CPAs. All right. So really, we did audits. Now things have changed. And what I'm saying is, all right, is it possible that this might work? I mean, I'm not holding you to this. But my thought was, let's go back with the CPA exam and say, we're testing people on the overall knowledge of accounting, all right? The four parts, whatever. Now, they get the certificate, and now they can decide, all right? If they want to go into public accounting, they will have to get certain number of years of experience in that. But if they want to go straight into consulting, or they're straight into taxes, that type of thing, all right? Why would that not work? Because I know the purpose, what the ASCPA is there is to do, is to give an exam to protect the public interest, correct?
Correct.
And that's for what? Audits? Is that what the protection is? Or all parts of accounting?
Well, largely the CPA has a license, and what are they licensed to do? And that's what they're licensed to do, is to sign a financial audit and a SOC audit. Right.
Right.
So the challenge with different models is you can't license, you can try, but it's very difficult to try to go and license something that isn't currently licensed. For example, consulting is not licensed. It's not a license, you know, you don't need a license to practice consulting. So to tell the firms or to tell candidates that they should get a license, a CPA license before being a consultant, there's no requirement there, right?
Right.
And you've got a whole anti-regulation group out there saying the last thing we need is increased regulation of something that isn't currently regulated. So I think that's why that CPA Evolution Committee is looking at this now. You know, protection of the public interest comes in through the trusted advisor status of the CPA and the work they do as auditors and in the tax field. You know, it just so happens that firms have grown their consulting arm in many ways based on sort of the rigor and the professionalism of the audit team. So I don't know that licensing consultants is, you know, the answer. I know it, you know, but do you specialize CPA? Do you make a base license with maybe board certification like they do in medicine? You know, there's a number of different models that could potentially be explored. I know a lot of that is based in state law and rule.
Yeah. Well, you go to medical school and you learn, you know, medicine.
Well, you're licensed as a general physician when you're done.
Well, no. Right. You come out and then don't you start taking board tests at that point?
Well, you'd start taking board tests your second year of med school.
Okay.
Then your third and fourth year of med school, then your first year of residency.
But you really can't practice as a physician, can you, until you pass all the boards?
Well, you know, what's interesting is you can practice as a physician, but what's happening, and it's really much like in CPA, you're governed, or all of your work is reviewed by an attending, right? It's reviewed by either a resident above you or an attending physician.
Okay, so if we go that route, all right, you take the exam, all right? Is there any way to have someone, you know, maybe whatever area you go into would be evaluating you? Not with the 1 year under a CPA, but, you know.
Yeah, you could potentially change, you could change requirements around experience. Yeah, something like that. But again, that's rooted in state law. So.
Well, where do you think this is going to, I know you're always asking us what we think, all right? Do you have any idea? I mean, have you thought about, what do you think is going to happen?
So yeah.
Increase the numbers. Well, you have to increase the numbers.
Well, I think there's lots of options. I'm not sure that anyone is any more popular than others. I think the whole profession is considering, you know, do we specialize with a, like a financial audit versus a SOC audit versus tax? But there's, you know, some things that people don't like about that. What I can tell you is there's clearly a greater emphasis, and we're seeing this through the current practice analysis, there's a greater emphasis on technology, on systems, on the digital mindset, on SOC and the SOC audits, you know, audit analytics, Excel. So where we know we're going to be adding content and expanding is in those areas. And I do think we'll probably start to prune, and we are doing this, pruning and prioritizing what I would call some of the niche areas. Now, some people may argue everybody needs to know that. But if we want to keep it a 16-hour exam, something's got to go to make room for this new stuff. So I do know that we're going there. How the license is going to play out is a decision and a lot of discussions that we're involved in, but that's above my pay grade.
Well, right? How serious is this problem, though? I mean, does this have to be turned around quickly, or?
I don't know about quickly, but because clearly, you know, the audit's requirement, there's still a lot of, you know, the big firms are still hiring tens of thousands of CPAs every year. Firms are still growing and baking their or basing their growth on tax, that their tax profession and audit profession. So I don't think we're in an emergency, but clearly we've got to explore changing the licensure model. And I think we definitely have to beef up, you know, technology and analytics, which, you know, we've got plans to do that.
And you will, when you say that, you're going to, on the CPA exam, you are planning to go to the new technology, like asking questions on bots, clouds, cloud consulting.
The bot stuff and RPA, I think you'll see that coming down the road in a couple of years, and whether that's one or four, I don't know. But I can tell you in 2020 and into 2021, data analytics, projections with data, anomalies with data, digital mindset, how does a business flow? Can you follow the cash? You know, the role of the systems and SOC audits and user controls in SOC audits, you know, that'll be with us in the next year or two, for sure.
One last question. All right. Do you get calls from candidates about how they should study for the CPA exam?
We don't get calls, but, you know, everywhere we go, I get two questions. One, or a couple of questions. Do you curve the exam? When's the easiest time to take the exam? Can you give me the answers? And then the last question that I can answer is, you know, what's the best way to study, or what's the best approach? And again, you know, you've said it. I always say, you know, look at the blueprints. I think the people that work in accounting and have internships or work in their family business, I think have an advantage, you know, because they're working in the profession. You know, read the books, do well, you know, get your master's in accounting or your 120 plus 30, focus on data analytics and technology, and work with your review course provider because they've been there and they're trying to help you.
Mike, I have to compliment you at those course providers meetings that I attend. You are under a lot of, you know, I mean, basically people are coming at you. And if anybody handles it, it's you. I mean, you know, we kid around, you and I, over the years, but like I wrote to you an email, I have the greatest respect for you. You have a tough position. And, you know, on behalf of Phil Yeager, I want to thank you. And I'd hate to see if anybody else had it took over. I don't know if they do as good a job as you would. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the compliments. It's a great job. You know, it's interesting. I'm not a CPA, but it's a great profession. I enjoy everybody I work with. I enjoy the whole, you know, accounting profession. I think maybe if I didn't go into math and comp sci back in the day, I might have, I think I would have been a pretty good CPA. So,
You think you could pass the exam?
No. I could probably take a shot at BEC. I don't know if I'd pass, you know, because I think some of that I might be able to do, but, you know, just given my background. But no, definitely not FAR, definitely not reg, and definitely not audit. So,
well, you know, if you take a good review course, you do that.
Yeah. So if I ever consider, I ever consider changing careers and becoming a CPA or enhancing my career, I'll come see you. How's that?
You'll see me. All right.
Perfect.
I'll count on that.
All right. Good.
I'll take that out.
Awesome.
All right. Anyway. Hey, Mike, thank you very much. I appreciate this. I really do. Thank you. And you
stay well.
And I'll see you, I guess, in March or April, whenever we have the meeting.
We'll see you next year. All right. Perfect.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
All right. Have a good week.
Once again, I'd like to thank you for being the best part of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager. If you have any questions or topics you'd like to hear on the show, or If you'd like to be a guest on the show to share your story, we want to hear from you. Send me an email to the studio at podcast@JaegerCPAReview.com. If you're enjoying the content that we're providing, we'd greatly appreciate it if you'd submit a review to the Apple iTunes podcast app to let us know how we're doing. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to find out more about the CPA exam and what Jaeger has to offer, check out JaegerCPAReview.com or call our office and we'll answer any questions you may have. The link and the phone number will be in the description of this podcast. Here at Team Jaeger, we're excited to tell you about our new Jaeger CPA Review subscription format. It's the same great Jaeger CPA Review course that you know and love on an all-new month-to-month, no-commitment subscription format. Check it out today. Once again, my name's Rob Medford. I'm your executive producer and director here at the Jaeger Studios. And until next time, take care and be audit you can be.